This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. Save 20% at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
Over 25 years ago, on September 29th, 1998, we watched a brainy girl with curly hair drop everything to follow a guy she only kind of knew all the way to college. And so began Felicity. My name is Juliette Littman, and I'm a Felicity superfan. Join me, Amanda Foreman, who you may know better as Megan, the roommate, and Greg Grunberg, who you may also know as Sean Blunberg, as the three of us revisit our favorite moments from the show and talk to the people who helped shape it. Listen to Dear Felicity, presented by Walmart, on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. That's right. Today is my birthday, February 13th. I was luckily born in the 80s, 1981, which makes me 36 years old. Oh, I feel every day of that 36 years old, too. I don't know, man. It's funny. When I was a kid, you know, and I'd tell people, oh, yeah, I'm born in like 1981. They'd be like, oh, my God, you're born in the 80s. Like, that's so crazy, man. And I always wished that I was born in the 70s, you know, because that was like cool, you know. The 80s were lame. Now I'm like, thank God I'm born in the 80s. So I don't have to say, yep, it's a 79, because that would make me feel even older. But regardless, birthdays are always fun, except when you have a birthday in the middle of February and you live in Canada. Because believe me, and I remember all my birthdays, there's never been a nice day on my birthday. There's always some kind of brutal snowstorm. I'm recording this the night before. It's February 12th, to be honest. And of course, we had like a crazy blizzard today. I was driving around the city and it was just a mess. And that's just what is normal for my birthday. If you guys want to buy me a birthday present, and I know some people have reached out, which is very nice of you. You don't have to get me anything, but if you want to, I do appreciate it. So what I did is I made an Amazon wish list. So if you want to check out my wish list and send me something that's on my list or anything at all, you can go to leadsingersyndrome.com/bday, B-D-A-Y, and that will be where my Amazon list is. If you guys want to buy me something, that would be really, really cool. Today, we have a great show. Let's talk about that. Mr. Scott Vogel of the legendary hardcore band Terror, also of my favorite hardcore band of all time, Buried Alive. He is on the program. Scott is one of the most famous people in hardcore, definitely one of the biggest personalities. Vogelisms is a thing we talk about in this podcast, and you never know what he's going to say on stage. And having him was a real treat. I'm really, really glad he was able to take the time, especially with some of the stuff going on in his life. You'll hear it all. It's a great talk. We get very personal into a lot of things going on with him and his childhood and music and hardcore and everything else. And thanks again, Scott and Biggie, his manager, for setting all this up. Before we get into that, as always, thank you for the feedback. I love it. I love hearing from you guys, whether it's on Instagram, which we have at Lead Singer Syndrome, whether it's on Twitter, which is really easy to just shoot a message over to me at Lead Singer Syn, S-Y-N. And of course, we have old fashioned email. If you want to send me an email, I try to get back to everybody. I get a lot of emails, but I do read them all. And that email address is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. As I mentioned, sure, buying me a birthday gift would be really, really sweet. But what I really want you guys to do is check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Now, we just launched this a couple months ago. We have about 160 members, and these are kind of like the super fans of the show. So if you find yourself listening to the show once a week, And maybe you want a little more. Maybe you want more episodes. You want bonus content. You want to hear some of the unedited episodes that I've done. Maybe you want to interact with some of the other super fans of the show on the Facebook page we have. I'm on there posting every day. I do a Q&A all the time where I go on Facebook Live and I play some tunes and we hang out on there. It's really a lot of fun. And for as little as $6 a month, you can join up and really just help the show, you know, contribute to keeping the lights on, paying for some of the fees we have, and et cetera. So check out, all I want you to do is check out the website, okay? I don't want to harp on it. I know every week I'm going on and on about the All Access Club, and I don't want to bore you guys. So just go to the website, check it out. It is leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Read it, read the perks, read what you can get for as little as $6 a month. It is cool. It is a lot of fun. And if you want more, don't worry, the show will always be free. But if you want more and don't mind paying a small fee every month, we got it for you right there. So again, it's leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. In other news with me, I am currently on a writing rampage, a writing bonanza. That's something like Scott Vogel would say. And I, one time I saw them play and he said, I want to see a mosh pit bonanza. That's what he said. And I laughed my ass off. And Vogel is amazing. God, I'm excited for this so much. But I have been writing so many Silverstein songs. It's, man, we're going to be doing the studio thing real soon. I'm really, really excited about it. I know a lot of people listen to this are fans of Silverstein. So I wanted you guys to hear that information first that yes, we are writing. And yes, we will be recording a new record. And the shit we're writing is pretty damn cool, if I do say so myself. Anyways, hey, enough about me. Let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with Mr. Scott Vogel of Terror. All these people don't exist to me. I've made them no fight. And the world's so sick of the dose in you. We'll walk through fire till the end of time.
This is Scott. What's up?
Hey, Scott. How are you, man?
Not bad.
Dude, it's Shane. Lead Singer Syndrome. How's it? Podcast. Here we go.
How's it sound?
You sound perfect. You sound like you're sitting right beside me. It's great.
I got little headphones on, so I nice. Didn't know if that was going to be bad.
No, dude. This is perfect. How's Mexico?
That was cool. I'm glad to be back, though. I mean, you know, I'm at that point in my life where I like being home.
Well, how long were you there for?
Just like 2 weeks.
Oh, that's pretty good. What kind of a trip do you do? I mean, like guys like us, we've been everywhere. We've seen a lot of shit. So I kind of wonder what you're trying to get up to when you take 2 weeks in Mexico. Is it like relaxation? Do you want to see some shit? Like, what's going on with Scott Vogel on vacation?
You know, there was are we rolling here? Are we?
Yeah,
are
dude,
we going?
We're going. It's always
well,
on.
I think I'm gonna blow your mind then because
can't wait.
I don't know if this is putting too much out there right away, but we might as well just get some cool shit going in the podcast. So
yeah.
The truth is, it wasn't a vacation. I had a surgery on my neck, about May 2016. We were in Europe and I knew that the day I'd get home, I'd have surgery. So, and I just have some, I had some, well, I guess I still have some, some herniated discs in my neck from years and years of hardcore and jumping around and sleeping wherever and flights and being an idiot on stage and not knowing, not understanding that I'm now a middle-aged man acting like a child on stage. So the 15 years of terror and whatever I did before that caught up to me. And I went into this surgery doing something called a posterior. So from the back decompression.
Yeah.
Where they shave some of the bone that is in the way, which is pushing the disc is pushing on the nerve. So I woke up from the surgery, and let's just say it didn't really give me the relief that I was hoping for.
Right.
So,
and this is like almost a year ago, right? This is May of 2016, you said?
Yeah. So yeah. What, 10 months, yeah. 8, 9 months ago.
Whatever it is. Yeah.
So, you know, in the big scheme of things, I feel decent, but there's a fear of going back on tour and just reigniting these issues and being right back to where we started. So getting caught up in, luckily, thank God, I have pretty good health insurance.
Right.
But seeing all these different doctors and, you know, I also have some herniated discs in my lower back. Same cause, the retardness of touring. So to make a long story a little shorter, I've seen so many doctors and just been shuffled around, and none of them will treat all the situations at once. And I just got so frustrated. So I kind of started looking outside the box.
Right.
And I guess the Josh James from Stick Your Guns.
Yep.
Kind of put me on this path talking about ozone injections, which is, I believe, I'm sorry to him if I got the story wrong, but I believe his current girlfriend maybe got in a car accident some years ago and she got ozone injections in her discs, and it really helped her. So I started going down this path of looking for, it's something though they don't really do in the United States. So I only found a few doctors that would inject right into the disc. And along my search, I came across this medical clinic just over the border in Mexico, because a lot of the shit they do there isn't FDA approved, which is a whole nother story as to why things that are helping people in other countries that are doing really amazing things like stem cells.
Yeah.
Aren't really being used in the United States, which you can look at it from a lot of different perspectives. So I just said, fuck all these doctors that have been shuffling me around here. I'm going down there. I'm getting the ozone injections. I'm getting stem cells. So I currently have about 500 million stem cells in my back and neck. And
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So the whole experience down there was, you know, it was really crazy in a lot of different ways. One, real simply, I'm not the most outgoing type of guy. I don't like go to Starbucks and strike up conversations
right.
with strangers.
Right. Yep.
I'm kind of the person that has my headphones on, even if I'm not listening to things. But I was, you know, I don't want to say forced, but I lived in this, I didn't live, but I was in this medical clinic with all these other patients who had, you know, all varying diseases or varying problems.
Yep.
Some of them have cancer. And I was just, you know, in this place for a few weeks talking to these people and having to be very social with them, which people that know me probably think that's a good thing for me to be forced in this situation.
Right. Okay.
And I'm, you know, I'm very used to being outside of the United States and being surrounded by people speaking different languages. And, you know, so that part really didn't bother me, but dealing with different doctors that, you know, their main language is Spanish, and I don't really speak much Spanish. So I was down there getting all this treatment. A lot of people obviously have been asking me how I feel.
Yeah, that's how do you feel?
I would say I'm not jumping the gun. I'm not like a expecting to go down there and get some stem cells and injections and 43 years of damage I've done to myself is gone. But on my upper half, my neck, I feel a lot better, and a lot of the pain and discomfort is a lot better, and a lot of the like post-surgery tightness. And again, I'm a little, you know, I'm the type of person that doesn't want to believe it. I want to think I'm going to wake up tomorrow and the pain's going to be back. And I don't know if that's the right way to be thinking
well,
in a situation like this, because I think your mind has a lot to do with this. On my lower back, I have this. My body's just such a mess. I have four discs in my lower back that are herniated.
Herniated. Yep.
two of them, they shot a dye in and it leaked out, which means they're like broken. So on my right side, I feel completely relief. On my left side, not so much. So I have a phone call with them again today. And I have about 2 months and a week until Tara starts doing stuff again. So I feel like I'm going to go back there. And because it is, you know, the more stem cells, the more healing.
Yeah.
They also did the ozone injections, and they also do something called PRP, which is they like, it's a pain reliever. So I plan on going back there maybe two more times before we, hey, my little dog.
That's all right.
We go back out, and I'm very optimistic. And I think,
yeah,
you know, it's really cool too. They also do, you know, they feed you three meals a day, which was all organic, and a lot of it was vegan. There was some eggs and some fish, but
yeah,
a lot of the meals were vegan. So a big part of it is supplements and vitamins and eating right to get,
sure,
your body in the ultimate healing state. And, you know, that stuff is all just good for me too.
So what part of Mexico was this in?
I stayed at a, you know, they hook you up with a really nice condo right on the beach. So I was staying in Rosarito, which is near Tijuana.
Okay. So not too far. Drove down there from LA, I guess.
Yeah. I took the train actually for the first time, which was really cool.
Sure. That's wild, man.
Yeah. They're kind of low key too. You know, they have a lot of people that aren't really too excited about what they're doing, because it's going against the basic healthcare system, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening to this have their own opinions. And
sure, well, I mean you didn't just go to Mexico and have them inject things into you without obviously doing your own due diligence and your own research, and you came to this conclusion and you did it. I mean, it's a pretty amazing thing, but I think it also speaks to healthcare in America, which is, I mean, to be, for lack of a better word, is pretty fucked up.
Yeah, one of the things that really just set off bells in my head, bells of like, let's do this shit, was every doctor I see in the United States cannot do anything to all my issues at once. Because, you know, they're just not allowed to, like,
right,
they can't say you have all these problems, let's look at all of them. You have to go to these different specialists for different body parts, and they can't work with all your discs all at once.
And it's so stupid because everything's connected. Like,
oh, right.
You know,
you know,
I mean?
Obviously my lower back and neck are all feeding, sure, off each other.
Yeah.
And like these people said, just come here for a few weeks. It's crazy because when I first talked to the woman in charge, she said like 10 days, and then I sent her all my MRIs and she's like, you're going to need a couple weeks.
Wow.
So I was like, ah, you see how messed up I am. So they went down there and did like, they looked at all my problems and tried to work on them all at once and keep me there. So I'm healing. Hey, sorry.
That's
Let me
okay,
shut
man.
My window.
It's all good.
So yes. It's pretty exciting. So
did it cost,
back
was, it
to your first,
was it expensive to do that?
It wasn't cheap, but I could afford it. So,
right.
And you know, they were really cool too. They asked me for more money than I was willing to spend, and they were willing to work with me, and they have some outside donations and grants and stuff like that. But one thing too is, you know, they're pretty, what's the right word? I don't want to say secretive, but you know, the clinic is, it just looks like a house on a hill turned into a clinic, because they just have a lot of people that aren't real happy with what they're doing, which I understand that, you know. I think anyone in underground music has always had people not really too happy with what they're doing. So to me, they're kind of like, you know, the underdog going against the system,
right,
and I'm cool with that. So
right, that's the way you've lived your whole adult life. That's crazy. So I guess you must be excited for things to start up with Terror again, and you know, feeling better on stage. Has it been a struggle with the pain of performing?
I think over the last, let's say Terror's been a band for 14, 15 years. I think over the last half of that, so 7 years or so, I've always had, like, I'm just old and I've just beat myself up and I've just, there's really not much you can do about it. So there's a good chance, you know, half the time I'm on tour, I'm feeling some sort of shit in my neck or back, yeah, or even just, you know, the rest of my body, there isn't any like major problems, but you're always like, you know, I remember when we did Warp Tour, I couldn't not help myself from getting off these big stages and down to the ground area, right, and then getting back up, your knees just have bruises all over my, right, knees and legs. So I think as the front man of a band, I guess with Terror 2, you know, our thing isn't, you know, I know this is a lead singer thing and I'm not quite the singer. I'm more of a intense front man. I think our live show and going, you know, full throttle is part of the attraction, absolutely, of what people like about us.
Absolutely.
So, unfortunately it beats you up and then all the flights and all the overnight drives and sitting in the van. And then you add into the equation how much alcohol I've drank and yeah, just to say, oh, I can keep doing this. Let's just get through it with some alcohol. And sure, the end result is here. So, yeah, a lot of the times I feel pain or discomfort, but I don't want to say I've learned to accept it, but I guess I have learned to accept
it.
Well,
you mean, you really are a true lifer. I mean, it's crazy. I think you're 43 years old. Terror, you say, you've been in band for 14 or 15 years. Obviously, I mean, I, you know, growing up in Toronto, that's where I'm from, and you're from Buffalo originally. I actually first found out about you through Buried Alive. And actually, I believe it was your second show with Buried Alive ever. I saw you guys play. I don't know if you remember the show. It was at the Oakville YMCA.
And Oakville YMCA. I'm gonna just full disclosure.
Yep.
My memory, like my brother will be like, you know, because me and my brother have been through so much stuff together.
Yeah.
He'll be like, do you remember this? And I'll be like, nope. And he'll be like, how can you not remember that? And I'm like, dude, I don't know. So,
well,
I
that's
thought
fine. Go ahead.
I thought you were going to say that. I thought you were going to bring up Sonic Onion. Is that the
yeah,
place?
Yeah, Sonic Onion.
Store?
That was in Hamilton. Yep. I saw you play there before too.
Yeah, in my head, we played there before we played Oakville. But
it's possible.
Again, I don't know.
Well,
I could be way off.
I'll tell you what I remember most about that show and about your band. And I was probably I was probably 17 or 18 at the time. And I remember you guys loading in like actual, you know, full stack amps and all this shit and being like, who is this fucking band? And everyone's like, oh, they're this new band from Buffalo. And, you know, the singer used to be in despair and, you know, and I'm like, oh, shit, okay. And I got to say, man, when you guys played, and I remember I was standing behind your drummer because, you know, that's where everyone that was cool had to stand, right? You had to stand behind the band, which doesn't make any fucking sense. But,
well,
you know.
In one aspect, it makes sense if you don't want to get elbowed in the face. But
yeah,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and I'll never forget because saw you guys play, and it literally was like a as close to a religious experience I've ever had. And since that, and
thank
then it was,
you.
And it was crazy because then after that, you know, it wasn't like it is today where, oh, I'll fucking check out their website or, you know, whatever, go on Spotify and listen to the band. Like, I think I got your demo tape with two songs on it, and I maybe listened to that. I maybe even have your demo tape yet. I can't remember. But it was like, when's Buried Alive coming? When can I see Buried Alive again? You know, all this shit. And then I remember reading that you guys signed to Victory and being like, this is the craziest shit ever that this band that was like a local band is now on Victory. And then still to this day, Death of Your Perfect World is still my favorite hardcore record of all time.
Damn!
100%. 100% my favorite record. I still listen to it all the time. And I still think that record holds up. So I don't know if you have any comments on Buried Alive. I don't want to spend the whole interview fucking stroking your former ego, but I just, you know, I really just want to talk about that band and for a minute and what it meant to you. And obviously, like, that was the band that took you from Buffalo, you know, I'm sure you toured with Despair and Slugfest, but Buried Alive was the band, and you're like, okay, this is a real band and a real label. Like, really, that was the start of your career, right?
Yeah, let me give you all the thoughts that I came to mind.
Yes, please.
Despair was ending. Our last tour we ever did was with Hatebreed, and this was like 95, 96, and it was just actually on that tour, Tony Victory flew out to our show in California, in LA, and signed Hatebreed. So
yeah,
it was just when Hatebreed's momentum, like I got to see like that whole just machine of brutality just starting out. So, you know, Despair and Hatebreed had played some shows together, and I don't know how it all came together, but me and Jamie just booked a full U.S. tour. That was the first time I ever went to the West Coast. You know, Slugfest you brought up, we just played, you know, just probably the farthest we ever played was maybe Detroit or something not even Chicago.
Yeah.
So then with Despair, it was a little easier, but we still stayed on the East Coast and Midwest more. And then Despair's final tour with Hatebreed, we did the West Coast. And on that tour, like I said, Tony signed Hatebreed, and he also signed Despair to a – I didn't sign us, but he said he would do a 7-inch for us. So I guess it was like a starter move.
Yeah, yep.
But we came home from that tour. We went to Europe, and we broke up. Two members quit, and we just said, okay, fuck it.
Yeah.
And so when Buried Alive and so Despair broke up, and I remember Buried Alive was already a band without me, and they were practicing the four original members without me, but I would hang out with them. They were my friends, and I would go to their practice, and they kept asking me to sing, and I just kept saying no. I just kept, you know, when you're in a band and you break up, maybe kind of like a relationship, you're not so ready to jump right back in.
Yeah.
And
makes sense.
I would see them practice, and I was kind of torn between, I was like, fuck, this isn't exactly the style of music that I love, but it's so heavy and it's so good, and I want to do it, but I don't want to be in a band. And basically, finally, I don't know how my mind broke down, and I agreed to do it. And, you know, and then we started practicing, and, you know, I would say things came kind of easy to us, but that's kind of the way it should be. You know, I know that like there's this stigma attached to ex members bands and getting things handed to them, which I see.
Yeah. Sure.
But I also see you laid that groundwork, you know, I booked bands. I had bands sleep on my floor. I met Tony before. You do this work and you become part of this community. Of course, it's going to come back to you when you
right.
start a band.
You paid your dues in other bands, and that makes sense. Absolutely.
Right. I think that's kind of the way it works. I don't think you should be handed the world. You still got to prove yourself and get out there and work. But, you know, we got the Victory deal or whatever you want to call it pretty quick. But that was because we already had that relationship with Tony. And, you know, at the time, they had all of my favorite bands. They had Blood for Blood. Yep. They had Hatebreed. They had Strife. They had, you know, all these great bands. So at the time, that's really a great place to be for a hardcore band. So, my memory of Buried Alive is mostly doing these weekends with Reach the Sky from Boston and all Out War from Poughkeepsie or wherever.
Yeah.
We'd play with those bands all the time. And to be perfectly honest, most of the shows were 75 kids, maybe 100 kids.
Yeah.
And the scene was just a little bit smaller then. And none of those three bands, All Out War, Reach the Sky, or Buried Alive, were these like super hype bands or these flash in the pan bands. We would just go out there and play shows, and it was cool. And we did some cool tours. We did one of our last tours was with VOD, Candiri, and Scarhead. That was one that I'll never forget. What else did we do?
No, it's cool. But I mean, like the legacy though that you left behind with that band, and I mean, it's a little bit similar. I mean, obviously, let's not kid ourselves. It's not quite on this level, but you know, I was talking to Dennis from Refuse on the show a few months ago, and he said, you know, they put out Shape of Punk to Come, and no one really liked it, and they broke up, and then Refuse was done. He'd already was in a new band, and then everyone's all of a sudden like, oh shit, like this record's awesome. This is amazing, and you see these things grow, and Dennis is like, the shows were getting smaller. Like we're talking about playing to like 50 kids, 40 kids. And then they come back and they're doing these massive things. So like, is it ever crazy for you when you hear like a guy like me or other people say, oh my God, Buried Alive, like what a band, when you're just like, I don't know, like it wasn't really that big at the time.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. I'll be perfectly honest with you. Or something I really haven't talked to many people about. The end of Buried Alive kind of went down kind of in a shitty way for everyone. Out of respect to the other guys, I had an opinion and I kind of saw things going a different way.
Yeah.
And I kind of just didn't like it. And I was kind of, and still have, I kind of have an asshole side to me where I'm very opinionated and really, cut and dry about what I think is right. And I didn't like the way things were going. And, we did this last tour with Death Threat and I came home and quit and I said, fuck this, and just moved.
Yeah, and, that's right. Cause you moved from Buffalo to LA, right? Or was it Arizona?
It was to get to LA, but me and my girlfriend at the time, we lived in Arizona for maybe 6 months, but it ended in a shitty way. And I think I had a bad taste in my mouth. And I think those guys had a bad taste in my mouth, in their mouth, about how it ended. And I had always kind of had this negative thought about that band because of that.
Crazy.
I would say February of 2016, I did this like new band, project band called World Be Free, and we played in Buffalo.
Ask you about that,
We played in Buffalo with Judge, which was
that's sick.
It was great, but it was so fucking bizarre being there because every member of Despair was there, every member of Buried Alive was there, all these people that Terror plays in Buffalo once a year, twice a year. There's a handful of old friends and people that still come to the shows. And I'm not saying these people there were there for World Be Free, but with Judge, it just brought out so many older people. So for me to be there, I would just walk around and say hi to all these people and look at people and be like, I know I fucking know you, but I don't fucking remember who you are. So it was this bizarre experience. But one of the wonderful things was it got me in a room with everyone from Buried Alive. The drummer, Jesse, I've had a good relationship with.
Yeah.
The other guys I really had, he's got a wild style. So, me and the other dudes, basically Joe and Matt, the guitarist and bass player, hadn't talked in, I don't know how long, 15 years, whatever, 20 years.
Yeah.
So we had like, we talked and since then we've kept in touch and I don't want to say there's going to be a Buried Alive show tomorrow.
Well, dude, if there's a Buried Alive show in fucking China, I'll fly there, dude. I mean, like,
I wouldn't be surprised. I'll say this, those guys, the three of them, Jesse, Matt, and Joe, because Scott, the other guitar player, lives out here in LA.
Yeah.
Those guys are getting together and jamming sometimes. And I'm not saying they're just jamming Buried Alive stuff every day. But if there was ever going to be a Buried Alive show again, it would be sometime in the near future, meaning the next couple of years. Because
Very cool. Very cool.
That band ended shittily. And I'm not, how do I say this? I've resisted the reunion thing, but talking to those guys and getting becoming friends with them again has made me go back and listen to the, I probably hadn't listened to the Death of Your Perfect World in 15 years.
Wow.
And I'm not the type of dude to toot my own horn, but it's pretty powerful and it's a pretty cool record. So we will see what happens. As a year ago, I would say it's never going to happen. Now yep. I'd say, let's see what happens.
Well, that's the cool thing about growing up and, you know, people change, but a lot of times the core of who people are stays the same, and you can still find that connection, and that's a really cool thing. That's amazing. I really hope that you can make that happen. So we got to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, Loot Crate, but we'll be right back with Scott Vogel of Terror.
Over 25 years ago, on September 29th, 1998, we watched a brainy girl with curly hair drop everything to follow a guy she only kind of knew all the way to college. And so began Felicity. My name is Juliette Littman, and I'm a Felicity superfan. Join me, Amanda Foreman, who you may know better as Megan, the roommate, and Greg Grunberg, who you may also know as Sean Blumberg, as the three of us revisit our favorite moments from the show and talk to the people who helped shape it. Listen to Dear Felicity, presented by Walmart on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen closely. As a master painter carefully brushes Benjamin Moore Regal Select down the seam of the wall. It's like poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
Are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming. Every month, there's a different theme and new exclusive items you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. That's right. Loot Crate is really, really rad. They've been a sponsor of the show for a few months now. They've been sending me these boxes. They're awesome, man. Like, the different theme every month is really cool. They did one with classics where they had this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like a little shot glass. I got a Mario shirt. I got a reprint of the original Superman comic, and they sent me this little Ninja Turtles pin, like enamel pin, which is super rad too. So you really should sign up. It's less than $20 a month. You get 4 to 6 items, and the stuff is always really, really cool. And this month, they have a pretty cool theme too. It's called Build. And it's, you know, all the stuff that you like to build. So roll up your sleeves and get ready to celebrate some of pop culture's most put together. See what they did there? Franchises. February's hands-on theme is Build and features Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Batman, Lego Dimensions, and Tetris. Love Tetris. And always our monthly t-shirt and pin. So today is the 13th, my birthday. Happy birthday to me. If you want to give me a birthday present, you know what? Just get yourself a birthday present and get a Loot Crate, will ya? But here's how it works. You have until the 19th of February, February 19th, at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's crate, which is the Build Crate. And when that cutoff happens, that's it. It's over. So get on it fast. You got 6 days to sign up. And then make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter promo code LEADSINGER to save $3 off any new subscription today. Again, that is lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter promo code LEADSINGER. So let's talk about Terror. Obviously, you've had an amazing career. Now let me ask you if you can remember this. Was your first show with Terror, was it at Hellfest?
No.
That was not your first show?
No, but I remember that show. The first show with I wish that would be pretty cool.
I was at that show at Hellfest.
That was 2003 or 2?
I think it was 2002. I think it was 02.
Our first show with Terror was in a tiny little warehouse in Ventura, California, probably to about 80 kids. And yeah, I remember that Hellfest though. I remember walking around that Hellfest and the Terror, one of our, the image from our demo, that it's like a black and white image with an eagle. Yeah. I remember walking around there and seeing so many people in bands wearing that shirt. And I was, like, you know, obviously that makes you feel good. And I was like, damn, maybe we got something here, because every band I had done before Terror would put out a record or maybe a 7-inch and an album and break up. And then
sure, that's the way it was.
And it's just, it was really defeating because as soon as you caught some momentum and, you know, instead of getting $50, you were getting $200 a show, yeah. which means a lot.
Yeah.
It would always break up. And I attribute a lot of that to myself. You know, I think with Terror, I learned from my mistakes. And even, you know, the first couple of years of Terror, I learned from my continual mistakes of just being this ultra control freak, ultra, we gotta every show. Like, I remember being in the van and getting a flat tire and being like, if this show doesn't happen, we're gonna break up. We're never gonna come back from this. And now it's just right. Like, relax, man. It's gonna be fine. So I think a lot of those, you know, the bands break up from other reasons, whether someone gets a girlfriend and they stop caring about the band, or someone gets a job, or someone goes to college, or someone just doesn't give a shit about hardcore anymore. But it also had a lot to do with me being a fucking psycho, like I said, control freak. So luckily with Terror, some way it's lasted this long. No, Hellfest was not our first show.
Okay. It's funny, you bring up a good point about how back, you know, when we were growing up and some of our, you know, first bands, it was like hardcore wasn't, there were no like long-term hardcore bands. Like I can think of a handful, like someone like Sick of It All. But even at that point when we were kids, Sick of It All hadn't been together that long. You know what I mean? And it's kind of crazy now to think about that because like I said, you know, all my favorite bands growing up, hardcore bands, they pretty much put out two records and they broke up. Two records and they broke up. You know, everyone from Gorilla Biscuits to like, what was that band on Victory? Gray Area. Like, you know, there's a lot of great bands that they was just Lifetime. They broke up.
So some bands you wished they put out two records and broke up.
Well, I got to say, Terror, you guys have put out a lot of good records. You've been very consistent. But how is that for you being 43 years old and kind of being the same guy in a lot of ways, doing the same thing you've been doing? You know, you said at the very beginning of the interview, like being middle-aged and acting like a fucking kid. How is that for you? And is it ever like a double-edged sword where you're like, in some ways, I love hardcore. Hardcore is the most important thing in my life. But also, maybe there's other things I've missed out on. Is that something that goes through your mind ever?
I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it. One thing is, I definitely know that doing the touring thing for so long, it really cuts you off from the rest of the world. Like my family relationship is I think so much different than what it would be if I just stayed in Buffalo and, you know, worked whatever job and went to all these family events. And I'm so very removed from my family, and I think that was kind of a calculated move on my part. I didn't have the best relationship with my mother or father, and removing myself from Buffalo. And also on top of that, okay, it's Christmas time. Is Scott going to come home?
Right.
It's really easy for me to say, no, I'm on tour, or I just got off tour, or whatever. It just gave me that. At least in my head, it gave me a valid excuse, whether they saw it as, I know exactly what you're doing. So that's really removed. And then also, you know, with relationships, you know, I've never been married. I have no kids.
Yeah.
I think most people my age, if they didn't have that whole touring thing, that it's really hard to be in a touring band and to be a good boyfriend or whatever, whether that means you're faithful or whether that means you're there for the person when they get home from work and had a shitty day, you're just not there. Yeah. And if you're in Australia, you're on a different day, not even just a different time.
It's a different
day. You're on a different day. And it's just, you know, so that's one way you look at it. I also can say on the negative side, you know, I think being in hardcore for since 1987. How long is that? 97 to
30 years.
Yeah. So my brain still thinks about certain things in the scene or a little ethics or the way things should be or the way bands work. I still think about the way things were taught to me, but I'm dealing with kids and bands and promoters and things that have totally come from a different world. Yeah. So when I want to jump down someone's throat or talk shit or whatever, I've realized, hey man, you're from a total different world. Maybe you need to check yourself, and these people aren't doing things wrong. You're just doing things from a different, mindset. And it's not to say that I'm wrong or they're right, but you just got to kind of remember we're talking many, many, many years where things have evolved and changed.
Yeah. Well, that's it.
But then
go ahead.
But then I want to say on a positive note, because everything I just said was negative, I haven't worked for anyone, and pretty much I've had jobs. I drove a cab in Buffalo. I telemarketed in Buffalo. I've had jobs, but I've never had a real job where I have to answer to anyone. And in the last 15 years, I haven't answered, I haven't had a job. I've been around the world fucking countless times. I've been to Japan 5 times. I've been to Australia 5 times.
Yeah.
I've been to Europe 30 times. I've been to, all these places I could keep naming off. And I have a really, really great life. But when you get to be 40, I haven't played a show now in 6 months. So I have my friends hitting me up dude, are you losing your mind? I'm fuck no. I love being home.
Great.
It's not great for my bank account. But love being home. And I think 10 years ago, if you would have told me you're not going to play a show for 6 months, my head would have exploded. I have to. Yeah. But right now I finally come to this point, and I think everyone in terror, when we knew we were going to have this break because of my health issues, I think everyone was a little wary. Blech. But.
Yeah.
Talking to everyone is loving it. So it's no rush to get back out there.
Well, the thing is sometimes you need that break too, and then next time, you say you flew to Europe 30 times. It's true. A lot of people, I talked to a friend that goes over to Europe. It's I go to this city and this city. And I feel like a bit of a dick when I'm kind of yawning in the back of my head being Germany, what's the big fucking deal? I've been there a million times. But people get excited. But it is true. If you don't play a show for a while, if you don't go here for a while, you're oh man, I've missed this. It really does kind of ignite that fire again.
Yeah. When I love going to shows. I go to shows all the time when I'm home, anywhere.
Yeah.
So the only time when I really get that, and it might be my competitive itch, when I see a band on stage, whether I think they're just going through the motions or they're ripping it up, that's when I'm fuck, give me the mic, get me up there.
Right.
But other than that, I'm I do not need to be sitting in a van right now with the dude next to me coughing on me because he's sick, or in some dirty backstage, I don't want to say that I'm so over it, because I'm not.
Yep.
And I love touring. I love terror. I love playing shows. It does get sad when you're sitting in your room and you just packed your bag because you're going to Japan, and you're fuck, man, I don't want to do this, where everyone else is writing you, oh, dude, you're going to Japan tomorrow. You must be so psyched. And you of course, write, it's going to be great. I'm so lucky. But you're in the back of your head, you're motherfucker, I just want to watch the Super Bowl. I don't want to go to Japan right now,
I can fucking 100% relate to that. And that's a good thing to bring up on this podcast. That's something that we don't always talk about, is that whole...
It's sad, man.
It is. It can be sad. And getting older, too. I'm turning 36 next month. You know, and I'm the same as you. I've never been married. I don't have any children. You know, I'm single. It's there is sort of an existence where you're like, you know, you do something and it's so awesome, and you're like, huh, I don't really have anyone to share this with. You know what I mean? I have good friends, and I have, you know, I have a good relationship with my family, but at the same time, like, it can be a bit of a lonely existence. You know,
this is kind of crazy, but I've made a conscious effort over the last couple of years to try to be more, going back to Buffalo more. I lived with my mom and my two sisters up until like sixth grade.
Yeah.
And then she moved to Houston. So I moved in with my dad. So I lived with him for like seventh and eighth grade in high school. And, as soon as I got out of high school, I got kicked out of my house, lived on my own. And at that point, my relationship with my mom had been strained because, for lack of a better getting into it deeper, she kind of just dropped me off at my dad's and moved to Houston.
Right.
And then, you know, my dad, I don't want to put him down, but he's not the easiest guy to get along with. So when I was out of high school, like I said, I really separated myself, and then moving to California and then going on tour. So over the, you know, last couple of years, I've really made an effort to go back more, and I even stayed at my dad's house overnight, which was a little bit strange to be in this house that I was in for so long.
And,
but what I was getting at was my mother remarried. So my stepbrother, he recently got married. This was about, I don't know, a year ago or a year and a half. I don't know how long it was. Let's say a year ago. So my mom wrote me, your two sisters are coming. The four of us haven't been together in so long. Could you please come to this wedding? Sure. So I went to the wedding, and I saw my cousins, who I used to see all the time, and they were like children. And now they are like married with children, and I hadn't seen them in like so long, and it was, first of all, super overwhelming.
Yeah.
That, like, I, you know, I could still see their faces as children, but I hadn't seen them in so long, and now they're adults. And they're, like, acting as adults, but in my mind, they're like these kids. And they're, like, it was so bizarre and overwhelming. And at the same time, it was so sad for me to you know, whatever way you want to slice it, I chose this. I chose to stay away. And now I'm here, and it was really sad. Well, it was great too. I'm glad I did it, and it was the first step in being back in this family situation. But it was just hard.
So your cousins, were you close when you were children? Like, were they into music too? Were they into hardcore or anything?
They were so young. They were kids.
Okay.
They were like,
so they were younger
children
than you.
But I didn't want to bring this up because it's kind of corny, but they were like, oh my god, let me take a picture with you, my friend. And anyone listening to this, most people know that Terror isn't this huge band, and I'm not this rock dude, but they were like, let me take this picture with you, I want to show my friends that you're actually my cousin. No one believes me. And I'm like, oh fuck, that's like such a compliment and slap in the face
sentence. Yeah. Jeez. No, that's crazy. Oh wow, that is crazy. And you know, you say you're not this big rock dude, you're not this whatever, people that know you, I gotta say, man, you do have, like, Scott Vogel is, you have a reputation, everybody knows you in hardcore, everybody knows, you know,
I don't want to know what that means.
Here's one thing you must know about Vogelisms.
I do, and that's a girl from, it was a girl from Toronto. I don't know if you know that.
That came up with that term?
Well, there was a website, vogelisms.com.
I didn't know there was a website. I just have heard people talk about it, and some of the things that you've said on stage, which is like, you know, half ridiculous, half hilarious. And
yeah,
I want to ask you about that. What like, where does that shit come from? Because I remember one time I saw you, I think you said 2005 hardcore still alive, if you feel me, let's see a stage dive. Like, that's a direct quote. And like,
I'll give you my whole breakdown on that.
Give it
thing.
To me.
A, alcohol.
Okay.
I've been known to go on stage very drunk, so I think that feeds into it. But that's not the only thing. I think also, and there's the whole stage dive thing that's attached to maybe me or Tara.
Yep.
In the early 2000s, we had a terrible, terrible vibe at our shows of so much violence, so many fights.
Yeah.
And it was horrible, and it was not what our band was about, and it was really self-defeating and detrimental to everything we were trying to do. Like, bands didn't want to take us on tour, clubs didn't want to have us, people didn't want to come to our shows, and I don't blame any of them.
Yeah.
There was a time when there was a terror show, there was fights, and it was horrible, and we really tried a lot of different ways to get that away from us. And you know, I can say now, looking back, that shit doesn't happen at our shows anymore, thank God. And it was just a time and place of how the scene was. And I really feel like being a bigger hardcore band that we were and playing that ultra hard mosh music,
yeah,
I feel like we drew different types of kids. And unfortunately, when you get different types of kids, there's some sort of conflict, which is sad. Yeah. Because the whole point of the scene is getting outside people. You don't want to just play to the same people. You want to, you know, everyone comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
And you get these new kids, and that's the whole spirit of this. And then they get punched in the face, and then the last thing they want to do is come to another hardcore show, and that's just stupid.
Yep.
So I feel like somewhere along the way, I said to myself, man, if we don't focus so much on the show being this ultra hard mosh beat ass beating thing, if we get more of a stage dive vibe and maybe act a little goofier, then it will maybe take that edge off.
Yeah.
The violent edge off the show. So
right.
Put that in with some alcohol and me acting like an idiot and really wanting people to move up and stage dive instead of stand in the back and get elbowed in the jaw. That's kind of maybe one way we got away from all that violence. But I will say, when the vocalism thing became a term and I found out about the website,
yeah,
if people enjoyed it, it just totally stopped me from saying that stuff. Because on one end, it's semi-flattering, but on the other end, it's idiotic. And I didn't want the show to, you know, because I take terror seriously. I'm known to say serious things, and I didn't want the show to be, what dumb thing is he going to say?
Right, they're coming for some kind of comedy. Yeah, right. I get that.
And like with the website, when I saw it, my initial reaction was like, oh, let's take this thing's got to go away. It's just stupid. And I wrote it, and it was a girl in Toronto, and she replied being like, hey, I love your band, and this is just cool, and I'd really like you to reconsider me. If you really hate it, I'll take it down.
Yeah.
And I was just like, all right, go ahead, whatever.
Oh, that's funny, man. That's no, I like that. Thanks for the explanation. Like, another thing too is like the ethics of hardcore and all that shit, it really has changed, and you touched on it for a second. I know, obviously, like when we go back to Buried Alive, like that whole record is about veganism and about animal rights, and there's a lot of political overtones, and that's continued into Terror's music. But how have you seen that stuff change, and like where is your stance on it? Have you mellowed out on stuff as you've gotten older? Is that stuff still important to you? Like, what's kind of your whole take there?
Well, I'm not vegan anymore. Like I said, I had fish and eggs.
Yeah.
The other week.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it goes along with what I was saying, and I guess that I'm not the best judge on this, because obviously I'm not vegan anymore. I think the whole scene has really as where one time, you know, being living in Buffalo, Syracuse was so close, and Syracuse for a time in the mid-90s was like this mecca of hardcore, like such a small city.
I mean,
right, and they were obviously very militant vegan, and you would just go to shows, and it would be lots of fanzines, tables with, you know, literature.
Yep.
There'd be lots of debating in between bands where people would just be debating each other with a crowd of people around them. There would be lots of bands on stage talking in between songs. And it was beautiful. I loved it. And, and you know, I remember one of my good friends that I've known forever, one of my best friends in Syracuse that I've known for, I don't know, 20, 30 years. I don't even know how long. It's funny because he was ultra vegan. He did a zine called Hate Fanzine, and it was all about fucking smashing fur stores and all this shit. And, I don't know if he said it to me or wrote a review, and he had this thing like, I did a fanzine called Living Fanzine. I've never been straight edge. I would go to those shows in Syracuse and smoke weed outside, and which was probably a lot of not people didn't do that. But I had a fanzine called Living Fanzine, and I had an ad in it for the Raid. Maybe I think it's called Words of War 7-inch. So a really militant hardline band. I had an ad for their record in my zine.
Yeah.
He was pissed off that my non-straight edge zine had this ad in it, which still doesn't compute in my head. It's like, I listen to Murphy's Law and I listen to Raid because I love hardcore, and I would go to those shows and I would sing along to Earth Crisis really straight edge lyrics that, you know, I obviously wasn't backing up in my life, but the energy and intensity and how much that urgency, it hit me. And if someone has a problem with that, that between them and themselves, because I love Murphy's Law. I love Earth Crisis, which are two opposite ends of the spectrum, but hardcore that has energy and a vibe to it, and it hits me, I'm into it. So that whole thing, maybe that I just explained, it doesn't really exist too much today.
It really doesn't.
A lot of bands' lyrics are kind of vague and just maybe talking about relationships or how hard the world is. And I wonder if the world is really hard on a lot of these people. You know, zine, there's still a little zine underworld. I still make a zine at 43. And I get people writing me on Instagram like, you want to do a zine trade? And I'm like, fuck yeah, you.
No, it really is a lost. It really has been lost. And I don't know when it started happening. Probably the internet was when it started to go away. When people started doing blogs, which, you know, they, instead of doing physical zines. And then after a while, there just was no presence at shows because nobody's got their, like, a computer with their blog on it to read. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then all of a sudden it's gone, and then no one's promoting stuff. Like, I mean, I've been vegetarian for, I don't know, 17 or 18 years. And the reason that I'm vegetarian is because I went to hardcore shows, and that's how I found out about it. And there was a fur protest in Oakville, Ontario, where I grew up every week. Every weekend, we would go to the fur protest. And that just doesn't happen anymore. And I just wanted your take on it.
You know, I do think those things still happen, but the hardcore scene is just not attached to it, which is kind of sad. And I gotta blame myself. It's like everything I look at in hardcore, when I say, man, it sucks that this happens. Man, it sucks when that shit doesn't happen anymore. Man, it sucks. This is the way it is. In some way, I blame myself because I watched it all happen and watched it all change. It's not like I could control everything, but in some ways I watched it all change and I'm to blame. And, in some ways, you know, you just have to accept that, like I was saying earlier, it's 30 years later, it evolves technology is such a big thing. Now kids aren't going to make a zine. They're going to make a blog because that's what they know.
Yep.
And in some ways I try to accept that. In some ways, you know, along my path of hardcore, you know, and sometimes I've been outspoken and said, I think this band's full of shit and I think this band's this. But in some ways, I kind of have to take a step back and say, first of all, it's not a really good look being a middle-aged man starting these little petty beefs.
Right. Old man Vogel. And, yeah. You know, you don't want to get that reputation. Yeah, sure.
And I also think, hey, man, like, you're not the judge and jury. Stop being so self-righteous. Stop being so judgmental and maybe be happy that you're in a band 15 years later and still traveling the world and people still care about you. And maybe try to sit in that like positive place instead of like seeing these bands and crossing my arms and being like, they're full of shit. Fuck them. I gotta judge them. Like, you know, that's not a good look and that's not a good energy. So, you know, I've done these things and said things that are, you know.
You made your amends too, though, right? I mean, like I remember the Ghost Inside thing and everything. And, you know, you made your amends, right? And, I mean, that's a big part of being a person is like, admitting when you're wrong, you know, and being accepting to changing your mind.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say what I said about the Ghost Inside was wrong. I still stand behind it 100%.
Yeah.
But I do say I look at it from a different point of view, a not such judgmental point of view, and not a place where I'm the person to judge them. And on top of that, you know, me and Vigil talked face to face and said what we had to say, and then spent a whole summer on Warped Tour saying hello to each other, hanging out when the opportunity, you know, me and him aren't exactly the same type of person. So when he's going to gamble, I'm going to do something else. So it's not like we were best friends, whole, you know, hanging out every day, but we did spend a lot of time together. And I think that's what's important. And I think, you know, he probably took away from what I said, probably said to himself, I wonder why he's saying this. Okay. Yep. This, and this. And I took away what I just said. There Stop being such a judgmental asshole. And be happy with what I have. So I think that's the way you got to look at it.
That's great, man. Well, thank you so much. I got a couple more things I want to talk to you, but I don't want to take up too much more of your time. Somebody told me you might be starting a podcast. Is that true?
I know who must have told you that.
You can give me a maybe.
Well,
you don't have to go into details.
I've got this idea in my head. I've got to say Jordan, our guitarist, who lives in Toronto also.
Okay, yeah.
He turned me on to podcasts. What did he get me into? Whatever he got me into, maybe the Josta Show and Bill Burr.
Yep.
I was just saying yesterday I finished up doing some vocals for a new Terror 7-inch, and we went out and got some food after, and people were talking about music, and I was like, dude, I don't even fucking listen to music anymore. Nothing. All I listen to is podcasts.
Yeah.
Like constantly, whether I'm in my house doing something, going for a walk, in my car, all I listen to is podcasts. And in the hardcore realm, there's the Josta Show, which really concentrates on industry.
Yep.
There is Ray Harkins does his thing where he talks about people's lives.
Of course. I mean, Turned Out of Punk is a great show too.
Right. That focuses on people's lives.
Yep.
Hoya from Madball does a podcast, which I really like. Which kind of just goes wherever it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to do. I have this thing where I'm on tour, and I see what kids, whether they're old or young, like to talk about hardcore. Whether that be old 7-inches, the best Craig Ahead band. This band put out a fucking awesome first record, and their second record was such a bum out.
Right.
Best live band you ever saw. And I don't really know any podcasts where it's just people talking about how fucking cool hardcore is.
No, I can't think of a exclusively hardcore podcast. I think you would be perfect to be the host of that.
So I have this idea because I would find the people that do this. And then when, you know, after load in, I would get around them. I'd be like, all right, let's fucking talk core.
Yeah.
And just wherever it went and through, you know, just talking about such like stupid things, like Sammy from Judge. He was in Project X. He was in Youth of Today. He was in Rival Schools. He was in Gorilla Biscuits. What's his best band? So you start talking about that. Everyone has their different opinions, and then just cool stories, like
absolutely,
you know, like some they just flow
guys,
out.
Man,
so
like it's some of those guys have been through so much shit. They've seen, you know, because let's be honest, once you start touring in buses and bandwagons and shit, life gets a lot less interesting. So when you hear those stories, right, and like, and everyone's on their phones in the dressing room all day long, fucking posting on Instagram and Snapchat, those aren't the stories you want to hear. It's the stories about, like, yeah, I want to hear about Gorilla Biscuits touring, you know, like in the,
right.
in the late 80s.
In
That's
Europe
what I want to hear
in 1989.
Right. That's right. That's what I fucking want to hear about. So I think that would be fantastic, Scott.
we'll see.
Yeah, man. Well, so good to have you. One last question. With the name Terror, you guys ever have trouble traveling with fucking Terror screened on all your guitar cases when you go through the airport?
Yeah, it's not the best band name for crossing borders. And I played drums in this band called Fadeaway from Buffalo back in the early 90s for a little bit. So whenever someone asked me, oh, you're like, you know, whenever I have to write musician or, yeah. Oh, you're in a band? What's it called? I just go to Fadeaway. That's my go-to. I never, because when you say Terror, it just,
yeah,
people don't know what to make of it.
Yeah,
and when you roll through the airport with all your guitars with right. Terror on them, and you have a duffel bag full of hundreds of Terror shirts and Terror stickers, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, well, when you came up with the band name, it wasn't. I don't know. It was probably before September 11, 2001. So it wasn't quite a thing yet, you know.
I know BD from Hatebreed, the bass player of Hatebreed, had a problem at the Canadian, you know, the beautiful Canadian U.S. border
where he had a terror
shirt. So it's really not the best name for that, but it's an abrasive name. You know, terror to me doesn't mean terrorism.
No,
terror to
no.
me can be like watching someone fall out of a fucking tree and break their arm.
Well,
so
you should just spray paint your cases with Fadeaway on them.
Yeah, that would be a
smart you'll know
move.
What it is. Yeah, well, that's great, man. Well, hey, Scott, thank you so much for doing this, taking the time, and all the best with the recovery. I hope the stem cells and the ozone shots and everything do some great stuff for you.
I appreciate that very much. Can I say one last thing?
Please.
Do you know Andrew from Comeback Kid?
Very well, yes.
Well, I don't know if it's probably the Canadian accent, but you sound so much like him.
Do I sound like him? Yeah.
I think so.
Well, it's
funny because... Maybe three times on this when you're talking, I'm like, holy shit, he sounds just like Andrew.
That's, you know, it's kind of weird because he's from Winnipeg and I'm from Toronto. And I never really had much of a strong Canadian accent, but, and I guess Goose doesn't really either, but a lot of the guys in his band definitely do. Like Jeremy definitely does. He sounds super Canadian. But you know, like it's the same with anywhere. Like you don't sound very Buffalo anymore. And it's just from traveling around, you lose your accent.
Right. You know? I get the some people out here, like especially my friend Dre and Martin, they're two brothers.
Yep.
From Dre's the singer of Donnybrook and Martin's in Terror and Donnybrook. Whenever I say like car or far, they're always making fun of me. Like, you sound so Buffalo. And I'm like, I do not, but yeah. I guess I do.
No, it's a weird thing. And then but Keith from E-Tid still sounds super Buffalo. Like he still says, you know, we're going to put on a good show. You know, he still has that. And and a lot of singers, I think it's just from talking on stage to people, you don't want to sound, you know what I mean? So you, over time, you don't even mean to do it, but your accent just goes away. But yeah, I mean, me and Goose both live in Toronto. Andrew, I don't know, I call him Goose, but yeah, and he's a guy I need to have on the show, actually. So thanks for reminding me.
Get the Goose.
I got to get him.
All right, my friend, thanks for having me. Have
All
a great day.
You too, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, cheers. So there it is, my conversation with Mr. Scott Vogel of Terror. So many crazy things. I mean, we talked about him going to Mexico for the surgery is so wild. I wish him all the best with that. But man, a possible Buried Alive reunion would be absolutely insane. Buried Alive really is my favorite hardcore band of all time. Death of Your Perfect World is my favorite hardcore record ever. I swear it was their second show they played in Oakville, Ontario. At least that's what everybody said. And they really, really did blow my mind when they set up these Mesa Boogie full stacks and they had rack tuners. And that drummer, man, he was like, I remember him being like kind of like a punk rock guy, a kind of a punk rocker playing drums in this hardcore band. And it was like really, really awesome how he's playing so fast. And yeah, I got that demo tape, the Buried Alive demo tape. And then every time they rolled through anywhere near me, I was going to see them, and it really sucks because they only basically put out one record, and then they did a kind of like a live record slash compilation thing when they broke up called Last Rites. But definitely go check out Death of Your Perfect World. I'm going to leave you with two Buried Alive songs, actually. I'm going to leave you with the first track from Death of Your Perfect World. It's called Watching You Die. I'll play that one first, and then I'm going to play what I think is maybe their biggest song, which is called Kill Their Past. Thank you very much, everybody, again, for listening to this. Make sure you're subscribed. You don't want to miss some of the episodes, and some of the guests we have coming up are so rad. Some people with amazing stories, some really big guests. And if you like the show, obviously we have the All Access Club. We have those things. We have the Amazon affiliate link. If you buy something on Amazon, go to leadsingersyndrome.com/Amazon. Just use that link. But really, I think the best way you can help this thing grow is just tell a friend. If you have a friend that likes hardcore, if you have a friend that you know, is interested in any kind of, you know, music at all, especially, you know, punk rock, hardcore, metal, whatever, tell them about the show and, you know, send them a link to this and say, hey, you should check this out. And hopefully that way, you know, we can spread it around and make this thing grow even bigger. So thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next Monday. I'm going to go eat a shitload of food and get really drunk because it's my birthday and I'm allowed. It's the one day a year where I'm allowed. Thanks a lot. Here's a couple Buried Alive tracks. Peace and love.
I am better off. down the night.